call to order the House Committee on Education for the 18th of March. First of all, first announcement, we'll have no work session on House Bill 2655. We'll hear that on Monday. And so I would like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3039. Richard, if you could read.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mm-hmm. House Bill 3039 allows district school boards to enter into partnerships for purposes of acquiring, leasing, or improving real property for educational purposes. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, so we have Representative Fredericks, C.J. Sylvester, and Sarah King.
Thank you. I wanted you to see the part that is.
Okay, thank you. Oh, you come
here. You could have stayed up here if you wanted, but
I won't be here very long.
Okay.
Thank you, Rick Frederick.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty, members of the committee. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43. That's North and Northeast Portland, the soul of Portland is what I like to call it. And I won't use much of your time here for me. There are others who actually can explain this bill a lot better than I can. I'm glad to sponsor it because it opens the door for some incredibly innovative work planned for Fabian School. It is in my district, but it's not just Fabian School. It's also Concordia. And Concordia University, and the partnership that's involved here is something we will be applauding for decades as a result of it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is C.J. Sylvester. I am the Chief of School Modernization for Portland Public Schools, and to my left is Sarah King, who is our Director of Real Estate, also with Portland Public Schools.
Okay.
Before you this afternoon is a draft of HB 3039, representing proposed changes to ORS 332.155. School districts operate under different statutory authority than other governmental entities, such as cities and counties. Our governing statutes must expressly allow activities in order for us to undertake them. Current statutes were drafted in an era when school districts were fully funded and able to provide adequate building renewal and replacement. Times have changed, and we are asking this committee to recognize those changes in HB 3039. Like all other older school districts in this state, Portland Public Schools has a portfolio of aging buildings, averaging more than 65 years old. Our voters have recognized the need to begin the process of rebuilding our physical facilities by passing the first of what is intended to be a series of capital bonds in November 2012. We were lucky enough to have in excess of a 66% a yes vote for that bond, and we thank our voters very much for that. Our buildings need to be seismically retrofit, accessible at a minimum to the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act as amended, and modernized for 21st century teaching and learning. The public assumes, as part of our process, that we will enter into partnerships and otherwise leverage these bond dollars to maximize their investment to the benefit of our students. We are seeking statutory change to provide some flexibility in this regard. We have partners, both private and public, who want to invest in our schools. As a public organization, we want and need to be agile and responsive to possible partnership opportunities. These partnerships can and should take a variety of forms based on how best they may serve our students. We also want and need access to other capital sources, such as federal tax credit programs. Sarah King will describe one current partnership that seeks to use federal new market tax credits in order to provide facilities for an early childhood center and wraparound services at Fabian Pre-K 8 in North Portland.
Thank you.
The Fabian, excuse me.
And if you could make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Yes, is this on?
Yes, it is. Okay. In fact, you can be about 12 inches away. It's very sensitive.
I'm Sarah King, Director of Real Estate, Portland Public Schools. The rebuilt Fabian School will house a pre-K school with Concordia University's College of Education. Concordia University is located adjacent to Fabian School in Northeast Portland's Concordia neighborhood. Concordia University is a programmatic as well as financial partner in the school, contributing a third of the cost of the new building. We are looking at New Market tax credits for additional resources, leveraging this public-private partnership. Currently, over 200 Concordia University students mentor, student teach, or interact with Fabian students each year. The co-location of the college in the school will provide a living lab for Concordia teachers and training. We know of no other program like it around the country. This partnership is crucial for a school of which 91% of the kids qualify for free and reduced lunch, and 70% of the kids are of color. New Market tax credit funding will support key wraparound and support services such as Healthy Food Club, a family resource center, a health and wellness club, and an early learning academy to ensure that students come to school ready to learn. The school will open in fall of 2017. And I do want to add that this is a project that we are actively working on right now. We are also working on another project that we also may want to utilize New Market tax credits, and that's in the Lentz neighborhood of Southeast Portland. And that's a partnership with the Native American Youth Association for another early learning academy. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions of the panel?
Yeah, I just had one other thing. I was lucky enough to be principal for half a day at Fabian in the fall, and it was great to see what was going on already with the Concordia students. But it was also disturbing to see, frankly, the Fabian school was built, I'm guessing, in the
50s,
mm-hmm. early 50s, probably. They built some good schools back then, but some of them needed a lot more repair and maintenance. We were dealing with, the day I was there, we were dealing with leaks coming from the ceiling on a regular basis. But that did not create any problems for the teachers or the parents or the students from Concordia who were there, really guaranteeing that they were going to have a good education for those kids. So I am looking forward to this.
Oh, great. Thank you. Representative Caluso.
Yes, good afternoon. So you talked about Fabian and Concordia, but I'm assuming this is for the entire state. I mean, this is not, I think it's really important to
yeah,
clarify
that. That is correct. The statutory language is intended to benefit all school districts across the state, and it is broad enough to include other kinds of tax credit programs, such as the historic tax credit program, because like a lot of the other older school districts, Portland Public Schools has got some historic structures. Fabian is not one of them, but we have a lot from the 19-teens and 20s and even some mid-century buildings that have historic significance. So there are additional federal tax credit programs that either, you know, Portland Public Schools or any other school district in the state could potentially benefit from as well.
Follow up, please.
Were other school districts included in a conversation or a discussion around this bill?
No, they were not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Other questions, comments? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Could you give us some other examples of how this could work?
I can talk a little bit about New Market tax credits. First, let me say that they have been used at the community college level here in the state of Oregon. I understand they have been used, I believe this is federal and possibly state as well, have been used for Chemeketa and Lane Community College. This is a program that's very often used for charter schools across the nation, not often used for public schools, so we're looking at something that's somewhat innovative here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real briefly, charter schools are the public schools also, so like we have
yes.
been doing it there. So as I look through the bill, the first page of the bill changes some verbiage that needed to likely be changed and doesn't seem to change the intent of the legislation. And so the bill really consists of the last 10 or so lines. So I'm looking at this, I'm trying to get to exactly what this does and allows, and it looks like it allows loans. That's really what it's about, is allowing the school district to borrow money, whether it's a new market tax credit or whether it's Chase Bank.
It actually also allows us to loan money. In other words, in order to take advantage of New Market tax credits, there has to be a qualifying entity. And so the partnership of Concordia. I'll use Fabian as an example, simply because it's one that's currently on our plate. Of Fabian, of Portland Public Schools and Fabian School with Concordia University, ends up creating a separate entity, which then can benefit from the tax credit program. So it allows us to loan the proceeds of our bonds or other other funds we have set aside for capital to this third-party entity of which we are a partner in order to benefit the school ultimately. So both of us put funds into this. It makes the entity eligible to receive the tax credits and to sell the tax credits and ultimately, then, that is the entity that is responsible for, you know, design and construction of the facility, although we personally are handling it.
Okay, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So could these be loans to private, nonprofit, for-profit, nonprofit, private, I guess, or public entities?
Thank you. Let me review the language quickly.
And then while you're looking at that,
may I follow up?
So the other follow-up question.
Yes.
Okay, so it could be to profit, nonprofit,
right,
whatever.
Depends on who our partner is and what kind of tax credits we may be trying to acquire.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so I'm assuming if somebody defaults on the loan, the process would be the same as anybody else defaulting on a loan, and PPS would be left holding a bad note?
No, because that's not how the system is set up. And I certainly wish we brought our attorneys with us. May I simply say that? Because neither Sarah nor I are an attorney, and our attorneys worked with legislative counsel to craft
this.
Well,
and we can have, if you're more comfortable, those questions answered, and we'll distribute it to all of the committee members.
So simply as a process, our government affairs,
okay.
I think I need a little bit of advice on.
Yeah.
Well, and while David's coming up, I'm looking at line 24 here, and how did you maybe loan monies to the partner or enter into financing agreements with the partner or another entity for the purpose of taking advantage of state? So it would have to be any state or federal loan program, tax credit program. I'm trying
well,
to.
Well, 12B is talking about entering into the best way I can reference this because. New market tax credits, for instance, have got their own very arcane way of structuring things in order to be able to take advantage of them. So for other kinds of development, developers, whether it's nonprofit housing authorities or other developers, may enter, may create an LLC for each one of their housing developments, for instance. Essentially, the same kind of thing is occurring here, only it's called a Qualic B. And Qualic B is an acronym for a whole lot of things that I don't remember off the top of my head. But Concordia and, do you know what off the top of your head?
Qualified Low Income Investment something.
Something, something.
Something, something.
So CB, yes.
And
so Concordia University and Portland Public Schools in the instance of Fabian would both be partners in this Qualic B. We would both be putting cash into the Qualic B in order, and then the Qualic B is the, which is the equivalent of the LLC, is the entity that is eligible to receive the new market tax credits and to benefit from them. So that's what a lot of this is about, but it's incredibly arcane, the new market tax credit system and the structures that are required in order to have the partnership benefit from them.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Springer, David Williams, Portland Public Schools. A little bit of the simplicity and the loans essentially are to an entity with which the district is a partner and a controlling entity. So it gets a little bit complicated in that respect. But the loans aren't to some other third-party person where default is of a concern. The loans are to this LLC of which the district is a partner for the purposes of taking advantage of these federal new market tax credits. And what we can do is we'll certainly sit down with legal counsel and see if they, in maybe as much as they can, in non-legal way, draft out sort of how that process specifically would work so that you have a better sense of the flow of funds in that arrangement.
Thank you. And I'd appreciate that because this is something that if we can use it statewide with a public-private partnership, this kind of thing might be advantage to a lot of the school districts that don't necessarily, they could have a bond measure, but they don't have the industry, that kind of thing, to get, you know, better bond rates and so on. Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So to get this right, then the school board then basically becomes a partner with a private enterprise, a private corporation, and then that corporation, if they donate to the school or whatever, gets the tax credit. Is that correct? Or maybe simplified.
Yeah. The entities, the partnership, will create a nonprofit corporation, and that nonprofit corporation. Thank you. That nonprofit corporation then receives an investment from investors who then receive tax credits for that investment. And it's actually structured as a loan. And it's very complicated, yes.
Well, in order to get a tax credit, you have to make a profit. So
correct.
So it doesn't that doesn't really fly in the description of why you would get a tax credit. It's to offset taxes paid.
Actually, and this is, again, something we can get more clarification on. This is actually used very often for nonprofit organizations where there's not much of a profit. So there's enough of a benefit just by putting equity in and receiving the investors putting their money in and receiving the tax credit. That's actually enough. There doesn't necessarily need to be a profit.
So I have a question. So it's investors that are getting the tax credit.
Investors get the tax credit, yes.
Thank you.
Simply for investing the resources.
Okay, Representative Pulso.
So my experience with these has been in the nonprofit world. So this is the new piece to it is I've never heard it done with education before. Not saying that I think it's a bad idea, but I think that's where some of the clarification needs to come a little firmer on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're right. The nonprofit world or even the for-profit development world has taken advantage of federal tax credit programs to the greatest extent possible. And what we're trying to do is expand that here in the state of Oregon so that K-12 institutions can also be a party to accessing those federal tax credits.
Understood. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Hack. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the tax credit comes from the investment.
Solar.
Is that right? Okay. Thank
investor.
You.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, it's definitely something that a lot of districts are using because I graduated in the Portland High School. That's probably the newest, that's still open. That's one of the newest, and it was built open in 1958. So, yeah, that was Wilson. That's the new school.
A mid-century classic.
Oh, are you serious?
Is that what you're calling the chair?
Hold on.
No.
I am a mid-century classic.
The bill is dead. The bill's dead.
New name tag.
Yeah, and proud of it. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
You. And we'll get you those follow-up documents, including a flowchart.
Thank you very much. Okay. Anyone else want to speak on House Bill 39? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3039, and this mid-century classic will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3045.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3045 removes the requirement that school districts transfer monies to other school districts for students who attend public charter schools in the school district and as a resident of the other school district, declares an emergency effective 1st July 2015.
Okay. Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Members of the committee, David Williams, Portland Public Schools.
Doesn't he look awkward?
We'll refrain from any characterizations of people's tenure in high school or otherwise. The bill you have before you is a really pretty technical bill. This, we've been working with a group of what we call charter authorizers. So these are school districts that are sponsors of the bulk of charter school districts around the state. Folks from Gresham Barlow, from Oregon City, from us, from a variety of school districts. They've been doing a lot of things, but one of the things they've been doing is sort of looking at ways we can improve the charter school law. And this one in particular stuck out as a fairly technical piece that we wanted to bring to your attention. So let me explain what happens currently. So right now, for a student that attends a charter school in a non-resident district, so for instance, a PPS student attending a charter school in Gresham Barlow, Gresham Barlow passes on 80% for an elementary or 95% for a high school student of the ADMW to that charter school. The rest that is retained, either the 5% or the 20%, half of that is distributed back to the original resident school district, so back to PPS, or vice versa. If I have a Gresham Barlow kid in my district, I'm sending it to another district. So we're only talking about the portion of funds that are retained by the school districts themselves. Not, this doesn't impact any of the funds going to charter schools. This sort of flow of funds around the state has become a bit of an administrative burden and or hit and miss in whether it's actually happening kind of around the state. There are some districts that will simply cut checks and mail them out. Some districts will require districts to enter into, say, an IGA or a contract arrangement to receive the funds or distribute the funds, et cetera. Some districts just don't pay attention to it and do it. It's not been sort of meaningfully used around the state. And in scope, for Portland Public Schools, we're talking about both directions, incoming and outgoing, about $50,000 each. So keep in mind, we're about a $500 million annual operating budget. That $50,000 for the administrative work we have to do seems kind of needless. So, and a lot of the other districts all of the ones we've talked to certainly agree with us, and the bill proposed to simply eliminate that. So the student goes to a charter school, the district retains their portion and retains the entirety. There's no return back to a resident district or not. I think it also aligns nicely with the fact that for almost all purposes in education, we've made students resident of the district in which the charter is located. Most specifically, a couple of sessions ago, you did this for special ed law, so FAPE resides with the school district in which the charter is located. All of those reasons, we think, just leave the money where it is, and rather than have this administrative back and forth. So that's really the bill in a nutshell before you. We think generally a pretty technical bill, and hopefully one we can also.
If I, Representative Smear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the history on that piece initially? I'm trying to think and reflect back why half of the 10% or whatever percent goes to the district that appears to not be managing any piece.
Right. Chair Doty, Vice Chair Springer, you know, I can't speak to the specific history of it. I know there are folks on committee and in the room who were around when we wrote the statute originally. I imagine there was, because there were certain aspects that were retained by the resident district, specifically the biggest one being responsibility for FAPE, for special education. I think there was some sort of student tracking requirement that districts perceived to be there, so there was a retention and an acknowledgement that where the kid was a resident, the district, he'll still had some responsibility to that student. But I think as we've moved through multiple tweakings of the charter school law, I think we've made it clearer and clearer that the student is resident of the district in which they attend that charter school. And, you know, this just doesn't really, there's really nothing that I, as a originating district, are doing for that kid or with that kid that would require that funds to be retained. And if there was, it's simply not enough to really make it worthwhile to do the administrative work.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Other questions?
It's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's it. Mr. Williams is the only one that signed up. Are there any other people that would like to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3045 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3046.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3046 allows the State Board of Education to grant waivers related to public charter school application processes if the school district board meets specified criteria.
Okay, so we have Ruth Atkins, Kristen Miles and Dave Williams.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Members of the committee, David Williams, Portland Public Schools, yet again. I won't go into this. We've got Ruth Adkins from our board and Kristen Miles to talk about why and what we're doing with this piece of legislation, and certainly we'll be here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Great, thank you so much. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ruth Adkins. I'm a member of the Portland Public School Board. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you here today about House Bill 3046. So I've served on the Portland School Board since 2007, and Portland Public Schools usually receives about 2 to 3 or so charter applications per year, and I've been on the our board is quite involved in reviewing in great depth with great support from Kristen and the rest of our staff, all those applications, as well as, of course, the ongoing oversight of those charter applications. But receiving about 2 to 3 in a year that can come from any sort of direction or educational philosophy that just comes at us, as it were. And we do put on our application form that we're looking particularly for charter school applications that focus on our priorities around closing the achievement gap and the opportunity gap, meeting our milestones around third grade reading, high school graduation, transition to ninth grade, and educating a racially and socioeconomically diverse group of students, which we are serving and which we historically have underserved and need to do better to meet the needs of those students in particular, as well as culturally competent curriculum and pedagogy. So we put that kind of description and request on our website, but there's really nothing in the current statute that allows us to specifically and proactively seek out applicants for charter school programs that would really help address and meet those strategic priorities for our district and better serve our students. So as David was referencing, you know, as there's been tweaks and as things have become more sophisticated over the years between, you know, districts, the state, as well as charter applicants, just in how charter schools are operated and operate and how things fit into the wider system, we really saw the need for being able to, again, be proactive and strategic about how we reach out. And if we could be saying and doing a sort of an RFP process to say, here's what we're trying to accomplish in our district, here's where we're falling short, here are some of the gaps, and here are some the types of charter programs that could help us that would align with what we're trying to accomplish and would help meet those. But we have found, really, to be frank, in the applications, most, not all, but many of the applications that we have received for charter schools over the years, that while they have varying philosophies and descriptions, and they all are very committed to having diversity and great outreach, ultimately they target and end up serving the same populations of really high-performing and affluent families who already do have access to a number of options in the district, who already are succeeding in our district and who are actually meeting their needs quite well. So again, we're really hoping that through this legislation and really tweaking and updating it, that, and Kristen will be able to give you more detail about the actual mechanics of it, but I just wanted to weigh in from the governance perspective of what we're trying to achieve and being able to be, again, and proactive and strategic in how we work with and reach out to folks who might be interested in a more innovative or flexible model using the charter school statute to better meet the needs of our students. So thank you again for the opportunity to speak today. I'll turn it over to Kristen, who knows it all.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Miles, and I'm the director of the Charter Schools Program for Portland Public Schools. And as our director, Adkins, just mentioned, the primary focus of House Bill 3046 is to allow districts to request a waiver from the existing application and evaluation process in order to bring about greater focus to a charter school district's charter school applications process and to provide greater relevance of charter schools to a district's main educational goals. Currently, the charter school application process is governed by ORS 338.045, which dictates the minimum proposal requirements, and ORS 338.055, which describes the evaluation process, criteria, and timelines. Under current law, a district must accept and review any and all applications submitted and must evaluate each based on a common set of criteria, regardless of the focus of the application or the needs of the students in the district. House Bill 3046 would allow a district to better align its charter school application process with its own goals for increasing student achievement and with its state accountability framework by providing the opportunity to request this waiver. So a district seeking a waiver of these sections of the statute would be required to submit a proposal for an alternative application process and set of evaluation criteria. The proposal would be submitted to the State Board of Ed. The proposal must describe the alternative application process, how the process aligns with the district's goals for increasing student achievement and its state accountability framework, and how the process would increase equitable access to underserved families. The State Board of Ed would evaluate the proposal based on whether or not these components were satisfactorily described and would approve or deny the waiver request. There is existing precedent in current charter school law for waiver requests. ORS 338.0252 states that the State Board of Ed may grant a waiver of any provision of this chapter if the waiver promotes the development of programs by providers, enhances equitable access by underserved families to the public education of their choice, extends equitable access to public support by all students, or permits high-quality programs of unusual cost. The required components of both the waiver proposal process and the waiver evaluation criteria would align with the existing statute. This bill simply seeks to outline a process by which a district may request a waiver of the application and evaluation requirements in charter law, as well as the process by which that proposal would be evaluated by the State Board of Ed. And also, just to point out, districts could choose whether or not to seek a waiver. Nothing about this would be mandatory. And so thank you for letting us speak, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. I come at this from a long way back. As we discussed today in my office, I was part of the 1999 House Ed Committee that passed out charter schools, and I maybe a little more than vaguely remember some of the biggest challenges and the biggest problems that we had along the way. One of those issues was the fact that the potential formation of some of these charter schools was not seen as a particularly friendly engagement with the home district. And so I've been absolutely and totally removed from this issue since 1999. So I'm coming back here in 2015 looking at some of the changes that have occurred over this period of time. Recognizing what I saw back in those days, it kind of seems to me it's getting a little bit tougher to have a charter school or to meet requirements to get one. A lot more hoops that we took great joy in throwing off back in those days. It seems like a lot of those hoops have built back in over this period of time. So I guess the question that I'm really getting to is what we're looking at today an effort to make it further difficult to get a charter from a home district?
Chair Doherty, Representative Wilson, no, I don't. That's certainly not our intent. Our intent, if I could describe it very simply, is to bring more focus to the applications that are coming to us. You know, as we talked about, Portland Public Schools has 9 district-sponsored charter schools and 2 state-sponsored charter schools operating in the district, with about 4% of our student population attending charter schools. So it would be a stretch to say that we don't like charter schools. That's simply not the case. We see them as key allies and partners to the district in helping to address the needs of our kids. But we want to make sure that, as Director Atkins said, that they're really focused on where our needs actually are, not simply on something that is already being delivered to kids that don't need that help, right? I mean, that's the point here. Since 99, I think one of the biggest changes in education overall that we've seen is the use of data, and that, you know, for all of its faults, the federal No Child Left Behind law is really what opened the door and really said you need to find a better way to see what's going on in your district. The law of averages doesn't work. So we disaggregate data, we look at it by individual students and by subgroups, and that's how we have a better sense of where those holes are. So with that data, which we didn't have back then, now we have that data, now I know where those holes are and where I need to be serving those kids. And I don't presume to think that we have the answers as a district, and so we want to leverage that process. We're getting 2 or 3 applications a year. We want to say, okay, here's some holes. Help us focus on those holes.
If I could, Chair Doherty and Representative Wilson, if I could just chime in on this. For me, it's actually a way of bringing the charter applicants closer and more, working in closer partnership is what I would hope would be the outcome of this. So that rather than, again, an independent group going off and putting in what is an incredible amount of work and effort in sort of starting a school from scratch and then coming to us, you know, 1,000 hours of work later with this application that we consider by a very narrow set of criteria, I would see it more as an, you know, again, kind of an RFP, community discussion of here's our gaps, here's what we're trying to accomplish. How could a charter model help us, and how could that better fit in and fill those gaps for us, and what might that be? So I would see it more as an opportunity for more discussion rather than us sort of being here and receiving things that come into us, us going out and having a two-way conversation and really being able to have our perspective around what we're trying to do for kids and then have a conversation with folks who might be interested in pursuing this model.
Just one quick follow-up. Thank you for your explanation. I guess the only thing that I'm hearing now that I don't think I heard back in 1999 was the district, when it came to charter schools, was talking about the district's need and not the need of the parents who were behind the charter. Mm-hmm. They weren't real concerned about the district's needs at that point. They seemed to be more interested in the needs of their children at that time. So, you know, maybe that's just the way the it's gone over all of these years. I don't know. I haven't been around to see. But that's the difference in the conversation that I'm hearing on this subject now versus 1999.
Mm-hmm. So. Representative Springer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wilson took a little bit of my comment. I have a question, though, also. Just a little bit of pushback, David. You said where our needs are as a district, and Representative Wilson talked about that. Charters are about the needs bubbling up and their focus that they want. And I would assume that if those are needs the district sees, if any district sees, they don't need a charter school to go after. They can just go after those needs. My question, however, is I'm trying to figure out exactly what this does and how it would work practically. And so the only entity that has the right to request the waiver is the sponsoring school district. Correct?
So, Chair Doty, Representative Springer, the waiver is from it is a waiver from the existing charter school application process. So it's not pertaining to any individual application, right? It's pertaining to the process itself by which we receive and evaluate applications in general.
Okay. Let me try to take another stab at this. I'm not convinced we're saying different things, okay, but I just don't think we're on the same page yet. Looking at line 13, it must be on page 2, it talks about the public charter school application process, a waiver from it, upon application by a school district board. So the school district board is the only entity that can request the waiver.
Chair Doty, Representative Springer, correct.
Okay. So is the intent that a group of citizens come and they say, we want a charter school that focuses on X, or we just want a charter school? And I realize some people probably, because it is a very difficult and challenging process, we've made it that way as a state, they come and it's just not there. The application just isn't whole and intact yet. But let's assume the application is whole and intact, and they say, we want to do X, and here's our plan for it, and they've crossed all their T's and they've dotted all their I's, and they start through the process. Now, would this be the school district applying for the waiver and the 60 days, it has to be granted within 60 days, did I read that? 60 days. Would this be the school district saying, this is such a great idea, we need to move forward on this and get a waiver on criteria? Or, forgive me, but I see the opportunity for the school district to say, we're going to put together our plan and we're going to expedite it. Is there a potential for that occurring?
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, I think there's a sequence issue. So what the bill is doing, what we're doing, is sequencing it before that point. Okay, so the process as it occurs now, community groups bring us an application, or more importantly, they bring us an intent to apply. They send us a letter saying, we intend to apply for a charter school with the school district in the spring.
And then, Ms. Chair, and it's about that simple, that initial intent.
Yes, it's simply
we intend to do
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Okay. And then we have a whole application that we, you know, data and requirements in there. It's very thick, and I've been on the reading group for the applications, and that all comes later, and we review them sort of throughout the fall, and then they get approved or denied, and with the goal of starting school the following school year. So come all the way back before that intent to apply even, where we go to the State Board of Ed and say, okay, here's what we're looking to do in our application process and the criteria we want to use. This, you know, will you grant us a waiver? They grant us a waiver. Now we have a new process. So then when a charter school, a community group says, hey, we have an intent to apply, we would say, okay, here is our process. And our process would be this new waived process. So our waiver is not, it would not be in response to any application you get. The waiver is sequenced in front of all that. It's more focused on what we want the entirety of the application process to be, not based on any individual application we may or may not get.
So, I'm thinking back to a bill, 2013, 2014, yeah. So we're talking about the same thing. This is just a different avenue that looks different to get to that point.
Chair Doty, Representative Springer. Yes, excellent. This is the evolution of work that we have done for a couple of sessions, a bill that was approved previously by the House. That bill had a lot of moving parts in it, if you will. And so what we wanted to do was simplify this and give districts an ability to be much more flexible in that process, rather than codifying some specificity in statute, which has a tendency to box way too many people in, and as well giving the certainty of this of inserting the state board into this process and giving them an opportunity for review and evaluation of whether or not the process the district is presenting is a valid one. So that this is an evolution of that. This allows an alternative application process, but it creates that state board of ed checkpoint where we're going to them and presenting them with a process that fits for us, and they will decide whether or not it's a process that fits for the state as a whole and would grant or not grant that waiver.
Representative Springer, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I appreciate that this is the same intent, just a different pathway. And I remember this bill quite well, and I remember the conversation around it last time was, frankly, appeared to be to me, and if this is not a fair assessment, I'm more than willing to hear that. This was a way for a school district to narrow what a charter school application looked like, and you've got to make it look like this to be able to apply, which some would say is so narrow, nobody can qualify. Is that fair?
Chair Doty represents.
Could that be a fair statement?
It is not our intent at all. We get a lot of applications. We review a lot of applications. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of charter schools operating in the district. Our goal is to focus the applications on some of the greatest needs of the students in Portland Public Schools.
If I could just chime in too, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Springer. Again, for me, from the governance perspective and the board perspective, it's that proactive piece. So rather than being reactive to what percolate, although I hear that the part of the intent of that there is this percolation up from the community, but from our perspective, we would like to be more have a two-way communication about that and share what we're looking for and be able to talk to people who might be interested in this model and understand where the interests are so that it's not this, we get the letter and then we have, you know, the huge application in the subsequent months of process and then we need to follow the statute in a narrow way. I would really like to see, given what we're trying to achieve as a district, the opportunity to say, here's what we're trying to achieve. Is there a way in which this charter model, with its flexibility and its other characteristics, will help fill a need and do something that we aren't able to do, although we're going to continue to try to meet all our goals, obviously, in our regular schools as well? I would just like to be proactive and have us be part of that conversation rather than reactive to whatever comes over the transom.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. Thank you, by the way. And just A little bit real quick on what you just said. If the intent is to be reactive, if you're given notice that the application is coming, does that not give you time to prepare for the application to come? And if the application is very extensive, does that not provide you already with enough information to adequately assess what the charter's doing?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Hack, thanks for the clarifying question. So to be, I didn't state it clearly. I guess what I meant was in terms of what the plan is for the programs, because by the time folks even come to us with that letter, and certainly by the time they've done the massive application that the state lays out, they have put huge amounts of work into their particular philosophy and program, excuse me, for starting up the school. So I think what we're talking about is backing up before all that work and effort has been put in to, again, have that conversation with folks who see a need, who see an unmet need, and want to take advantage of this model, and to be able to have that conversation. And wait, and it's, you know, it's on the district too. We have had our own share of not being in a two-way conversation with folks who are saying, "Hey, wait a minute, what about this? We want to do this other approach." So I see it as, again, a two-way piece. That's not us putting requirements on people so much as saying we're going to step into a conversation. And so we have plenty of information once folks have put in thousands of hours to put together their application. It's more before they've even started up that effort, can we have the conversation about the need?
Can I follow up?
Please.
So I guess I'm just having a really hard time wrapping my head around that someone would spend that amount of time and do that much research to do this much paperwork to find a need that they believe is so important and to be behind that in a community, which I've visited some charter schools, and oftentimes they seem to specialize in something that's important to a community, whether it be music or technology or something like that. And the way that I'm reading this, and I really appreciated what Representative Springer brought to light, is that if it doesn't fall in the district's goals, and I know that districts set their goals, and then all of their staff and everyone buys in, and the board has their goals, the district has their goals, and that is the focus. And if this doesn't fall within the district's goals, it's not going to be a part of what you do. But what if those goals don't align with what the need is of the charter? Then you're not a part of the district. I just, that's not what I had ever understood a charter to really stand for. So I would be really afraid that this could really do damage to charter schools. So I guess I'm just having a hard time understanding what the benefit is really truly in this if we are seeking to serve the needs of all students and do what's best for kids.
Thank you. So Chair Doherty and Representative Hack, no, I appreciate that perspective. And I guess, again, for me, it's being able to have a communication and discussion with between the district and folks who see an unmet need, and not to have this sort of arm's length legalistic relationship through the application process, but to have sort of a pre-application community discussion about it. Because there may be instances where the district could be more responsive and we could meet those needs, right? I mean, again, it's a two-way piece. It's not just putting the onus on the parents group or the community group.
One last. Could you not do that, though, regardless of a waiver application? Can you not reach out across your community and have conversations? And when you get that informational letter, could you then open up dialogue with them and begin to have those conversations while they're working through their application, not by saying you will fall into what our goals are, but embrace them if that's truly the meaning of this. Could you not have some welcome conversation and let's do this together, but not force your goals on them?
I'll take that. Chair Doherty and Representative Hack, thank you for that question. In fact, a big part of my job is to help applicants through the process. So we do have a lot of conversation with any applicant, and I always tell them that they can call me for anything at any time, especially to understand the steps in the process and what's required. So while we do work with applicants, we also see this as a lot of the questions that I get from applicants are, well, what does the district want? And I think that this would allow us to really think about that ahead of application season and ahead of the application deadline, and to be able to say, well, this is the need that we're looking to serve this year, and this is part of our goal, and actually soliciting from charter groups applicants that are willing to develop an application to serve these students in the district.
Have another question?
It just still isn't computing how that would, but I'm okay. I think I'm getting as good as I'm going to get.
Thank you, Madam. Representative Chair? McLean, do you have a question?
Well, I don't think this is an easy conversation because we've got limited resources. And so when you answer my question, I'm just sitting here listening, right? And you're lucky. I wasn't here in 1999, and I don't know anything about a bill 3 years ago. And so, you know, I'm starting with a little bit of a clean slate. So I'm trying to figure out what is the problem and what you see as the solution, okay? So that's where I'm starting. And maybe it'll be helpful, Jody, and maybe it won't. I don't know, Representative Hack. But it, my understanding is that the goal of this, number one, is communication. Number one is to make sure there's a dialogue before there's any expensive work done. And number three is to assess what the community needs. And those aren't your community needs. They are the Department of Ed and the State of Oregon's requirements that we have certain things taught to students in schools in the State of Oregon. So when you're asking for this dialogue, you're asking for the dialogue to help the charter school be successful, any charter school, new or old, and for you to be successful on taking care of the needs of the students in the school district. So and it sounds to me like you've been pretty embracing of charter schools if you've got 11 of them. So I don't see you as anti-charter school. So that's where I'm starting. And if I'm wrong, because my question's going to come from that base,
right.
Is that right or wrong? Is that what you're trying to address?
So, Chair Doherty and Representative McLean, yeah, that's exactly it. And I think, you know, just to cheerlead Kristen a little bit and her folks, I mean, she works incredibly hard to support all our public charter schools, as do our accounting staff and other folks in our district. These are our schools, and we support them. But again, I think it is that earlier piece that we are able to engage as a district and share what it is that we are looking for, what would be helpful from our perspective, hear what parent groups or community groups feel is missing. For example, we had the Kairos charter application that was saying, you know what, you are not meeting the needs of our African-American students, and we are going to start a charter. And they had a really strong plan and a really really good financial model and all the rest, and we, you know, we approved it, recognizing that for all our efforts that are continuing to be able to better serve our historically underserved students, these parents were recognizing that their students' needs were not being met and that a charter school specifically tailored to their community would better meet the needs of their students. We approved it, and we're really looking forward to welcoming them in our district. So absolutely, the intent, that, as I see it, again, is to be stepping back earlier in the process before folks come to us and to be able to have really an onus on us as well to say, what is it we're looking for? How can we be engaged in this rather than just receiving and then going through sort of the legalistic, very lengthy steps of the approval review and approval process. I hope that helps a little bit.
So now for the question. Okay, so we're starting on the same page as far as where I understand you're starting. So the charter schools and the charter school results are part of your report card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all 11 of those charter schools plus all public other public schools in your district, the report card is on everybody, correct? It's your report card.
Chair Doherty and Representative McLean, nine of those, yes. The two that are state-sponsored in our district are part of the ODE data.
All right.
But yes, that's correct for the nine that are okay. Sponsored by PPS.
So this is the question. The question is that in doing this dialogue or this pre-dialogue, the goal is to make sure that all students that are there in either charter, state charter, or your public buildings are meeting those standards from the state level and that your report card is pristine. Is that true?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, I think, you know, that certainly is a major motivating factor. It goes to my point about data and the way we use data now, the way our board uses data. Mm-hmm. A couple of things that are important to point out. These decisions around criteria and et cetera and the waiver, these are decisions to be made by our local elected Board of Education. That is responsive and subject to the will of the community as well.
Okay.
Obviously, in education, when you have a mandate to educate every single child that enters enters your door, there's no black and white. There are a lot of grays here. The other thing I do want to clarify, too, is this would not affect any current charter school in operation. Okay, this is all prospective to prospective applications we will get going forward. So it doesn't affect any current charter, and it doesn't affect any of them even on renewal. This is only about new applications coming to the district.
Okay.
And again, I know Kristen mentioned it, but it is simply an option for districts. I'll be a little bit frank in that I would be surprised if a critical mass of districts took advantage of this. A little unique in that Kristen is one of a kind in the state. No other district in the state has a director of charter schools. So we have the infrastructure and the ability to really be proactive in this area and work with our community partners in a way that maybe some other districts don't. But I think there is some nuance contained within there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you just mentioned, and I'm glad that you did, that there are two of your charter schools that are now sponsored by the Department of Ed. Why is that?
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Springer. So a charter can be sponsored by the Department of Ed once it is denied by the district. That's the only method of being sponsored by the Department of Ed. So many years ago, both of those schools applied to the district. They were denied, and they went through an appeals process with the state, who then sponsored them.
Thank you. And may I follow up?
Mm-hmm.
So I sat on a school board, and we had a charter school. And I'll be very frank, it's a tough relationship sometimes. It just really is. Because as a school board member, you can feel like, there go my kids. And the dollars attached to those kids. They're going out the door, and they're going someplace else. And that can just be tough. But the way I maneuvered that, because I would panic and say, oh, my goodness, look at the budget. But it really is about what's best for the kids and what the community is asking for their kids. And I think that that is why charter schools are so important. And let me say, my son didn't go to a charter school. They didn't. He went to run-of-the-mill K-12 bricks and mortar, average, wonderful community school, because that was our choice. But that was a very discerning choice. And I think communities need that. And maybe, because you can use all this criteria that's important in the schools. As school board members, we can do that already. So we have lots of ample opportunity to teach to educate to those values already, because we have so many schools to do it in. The idea of a charter is want it to be a little different. And I think that needs to be protected. I really do.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. So in other words, a charter school could go through the process of doing all of this and then be denied, or do they usually kind of have a hint before that? And I'm just looking at it because I know the time and expense that it takes to do that.
Yeah, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. Yes, so a charter school must submit a complete application, which first must be determined to be complete. So that requires a first read, just looking to make sure it's complete. Once it's determined to be complete, then it goes through a substantial review process, at which time, after the review and a public hearing, it would be determined whether or not the application met the criteria as stated in statute. And then that's a board determination.
Okay. So the board has some sort of discretion with what's in the state statute, but the board still has the authority to say no.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, as long as they are using the criteria specified in statute, yes.
Okay. And then the other question, Mr. Williams, you were saying this is an option. This is not a requirement, just another option that school districts can use.
Chair Doherty, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Not seen any. We only had three people signed up. Is there anyone else to speak on House Bill 3043 or 46? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3046, and that's it for the day. Anything else before we adjourn? One thing I want to say, we remind on the 23rd, we've got the kids coming in, and we have probably about maybe 10 so far that are coming in to talk about what schools are and what the schools are like. If you had anybody, make sure you get the names to Richard, because we are putting them on the agenda.
Right?
Pardon?
We just bring one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, stop.
Okay. Representative Springer wanted to bring all of Lebanon High School.
And Sio.
Yeah, and Sio High School.
And San Am Canyon.
Yeah, and but we closed her down. But you can bring, you Representative Hack, could bring two.
I can bring all of Salem School.
Oh. Yeah.
No, you can bring more than one. And I think what we're going to do is we've got four bills that we're working on that day, or, you know, just voting on. And the whole thing is to just go through and give the kids at least enough time.
Puts the reason on the bill.
Representative Reardon?
No, I just want to check with, I'll check with Richard after.
So anyway, that's it. Okay. So anyway, that's it. Representative Reardon?
No, I just want to check with, I'll check with.